Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Love a good mystery that leaves you wanting more? Check out my podcast. Hi, I'm Kadra, the host of Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. I tell tales every single week that have left me perplexed. You'll hear true crime cases, mysterious disappearances, learn about cults, hear baffling sightings of cryptids, chilling paranormal encounters, and even dark and weird history. I release new episodes every Wednesday, and you can listen anywhere podcasts are available. I'm also on Patreon, and you can even watch me on YouTube. Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. Stories that will leave you perplexed.
Most of today's story that I'm going to be telling you is from archived court documents, and quite a number of names are redacted in said documents because it's Canada, and there were witnesses that were minors at the time. But another really good source of information was from an episode of The Detectives on CBC Gem. It's from the perspective of the investigating detective Mike Richards. Unfortunately, neither source details the victim in life for me to really recreate who she was for you. This is the murder of Jackie Clark.
The conduct was horrendous, inhumane, and nothing short of evil.
If you see it, you smell it, you know it's happening, you report it. And this ends in this courtroom. That'll be all.
And I know the answer to the question that everyone keeps asking. I know why you did this. You did this simply because you were not in a cage.
But was she dead on the day I arrived? Or...
She was dead when you killed her.
I agree with the family. I hope you die in prison as well.
It disgusts me that you are allowed to exist.
The city of Fredericton is the capital of New Brunswick. It was originally home to the Wolastoqiyik people, First Nations people, who inhabited the banks of the St. John River, which runs through the city east to west, its indigenous name being Wolastoq. Colonists from France came in the late 1600s. The city is now home to about 100,000 people. And on the afternoon of June 3rd, 1995, 8-year-old Jackie Clark was living with her mom, who is not named in any of the documents, nor any of the reporting, and also with her stepdad, Bruce Grant. And they were living near McAdam Avenue on the north side of Fredericton. I'm not sure when her mom married Bruce, but Jackie had lived alone with her mom before Bruce had come along. And I'm also not sure on this, but I believe Jackie was an only child. I actually know very little about Jackie as a child, but from pictures, she appeared happy, healthy, well cared for. She had a cheeky smile and an adventurous little glint in her eye. And on this June 3rd, it was a Saturday, so Jackie had made plans to spend the night at her friend from school, who we'll call Rebecca's house. So Bruce, her stepdad, had dropped her off at Rebecca's that day around 4:30. Now, in Canada in June, it doesn't get dark until almost after 9. So after having dinner with Rebecca and her mom and dad, they headed out into the wooded area that was behind Rebecca's house to catch some tadpoles. And Rebecca's 10-year-old neighbor, who we'll call Marcus, came out from his house in time to join them. And then the three of them walked to this pond that is within these woods behind Rebecca's house, which it's not like a forest or anything like that. It's just more like a line of trees that divides residential areas from each other. And the frog pond ran behind McAdam Drive. And while they were catching frogs, a man with a brown fluffy beard wearing a black helmet drove up to the trio on a four-wheeler, or an ATV if you want to call it that. The man stopped and inquired about their frog findings. Now, Jackie was more interested in the man's ATV. She had never ridden on one. Rebecca and Marcus saw with distaste that the man had rotten teeth and with a belly that spilled over his pants belt. When the man offered to take each of them for a ride on the ATV, there was kind of like this track near the pond that went in kind of like a circle. He said that he would take each of them on a ride around this track. Now, Rebecca and Marcus both declined. Jackie, however, being a more adventurous soul and not fearful of strangers, had said yes to that. Rebecca and Marcus waited nervously by the pond, looking up and down the track for her to be returning, but Jackie and the man didn't return by the time that the sun was starting to set and they knew that they had to be home. They were concerned about the situation, but not sure what they were actually concerned about. They had both been taught to be wary of people that they didn't know, but not really sure why, like what a stranger could or would do. So they decided that they needed to head back to their houses to avoid getting in any more trouble. But they also knew that going off with a stranger was a no-no, and they didn't want Jackie to get into any trouble. So when on the way home, they ran into Rebecca's dad, who had come looking for them because it was starting to get late, and he asked them where Jackie was, like how come she wasn't with them. They kind of shrugged and said that she must have run away. They did not mention the man on the ATV. Well, obviously, this whole thing didn't sit very well with Rebecca's dad, who told his wife, and then they called Marcus's mom, who had returned to his own home by that time. Now, after Jackie's mom had been notified, she was, as expected, she went completely hysterical. The police had been called to search for her at 9:52 p.m., which is difficult to do when it's dark out. The assumption was that she had wandered away from her friends and had gotten lost, which is a little bit strange since the area that they were in was wooded, but it wasn't like a forest. Like you could see other houses from either side of the tree line. So the police started both a land and air search to search for her. Both sets of parents woke up Rebecca and Marcus respectively to ask them if they remembered anything in the early morning hours. Now, realizing how serious the situation was, Marcus told his uncle, who happened to be Detective Mike Richards, about this man on the ATV, which completely changed the tone of the search considerably, because it was now considered like an abduction and not a young girl that was just lost in the woods. So Mike had Marcus meet up with a sketch artist to come up with a composite, which showed a man with a scruffy beard wearing a black helmet. And Rebecca also described the same man. And the police asked for tips from the public, and a few did come in reporting that there was an ATV with a young girl riding on it with a man. One came from a man named Larry, who sometime between 7:45 and 8:05 on the 3rd was driving along the Ring Road, which is otherwise known as Highway 105, towards Sunny Beach. And an ATV going in the direction of Royal Road went past him on the other side of the highway. Larry said that the man driving the ATV matched the description of Marcus's sketch. And Mike Arsenault was fishing on the Nueces stream, and at 8:20, he had finished up and he had started back to the Ring Road. He was going to meet his dad, who had dropped him off there around 6 o'clock, and was going to pick him up again. Now, under part of the Ring Road near Sunny Beach, there's this cement culvert that connects Sunny Beach on one side and McAdam Avenue on the north side. Mike noticed that there was an ATV heading from the McAdam Avenue side to the Sunny Beach side. There was a man with a young girl riding together, and there was this little bit of a stream that ran through the culvert, and the young girl let out a scream when she got splashed going through the water. And it was really kind of more of a squeal of delight than a scream. So Mike waved at them, and then the man nodded back at him before they carried on their way. Friends Greg, Ben, and Jody had all gone 4x4ing that afternoon, and they were heading down Claudie Road from the golf course to Highway 105 or the Ring Road. and they were headed towards the Brookside Mall. It was getting dark out by this time, and so they saw lights from another ATV that were heading towards them, and they all noted that it was a Yamaha ATV and that it was a man with a young girl riding on it. So police ran a track on all ATVs in the area, and the next day, Mike Reynolds and his team of investigators set out to run down any and all of the leads that they had. Now, they couldn't really do a lineup for Marcus and Rebecca, being that they were minors. So each time they did an interview and met with somebody who owned an ATV or a man with a beard, the man was photographed, and then that photograph was brought back to Rebecca and Marcus, who ruled out a number of photos. On the Sunday night, there were two officers that were out following up on a lead in the at the Apple Blossom Trailer Park, which is on Kingsley Road, which is off of a rural road. They were following up on a man that matched the description of the man from the sketch, but they weren't able to find anyone that knew that particular man, the one that they were looking for. But while they were there, outside of another trailer, they noticed that there was this Yamaha Timberwolf four-wheeler. So they knocked on the door, which was opened by a woman named Marie, who lived there with her partner, Marie Lyons. Marie happened to look a lot like the bearded man in Marcus's sketch. But Murray said that his ATV wasn't working, so he hadn't taken it out for a while. So the officers took their photos of him, one with his helmet and one without, which happened to be a black one. And then they left. And they also snapped a couple of photos of the Yamaha on their way out. Both Marcus and Rebecca immediately recognized Murray's picture as the man who had picked up Jackie. So the officers went back to the Lyons residence just about an hour or so later at 12:48 a.m. to pick him up and interview him as a suspect in the abduction of Jackie Clark, who they were still actively and very fervently looking for. Murray said nothing in the car on the way to the station. He was interviewed from 1:30 in the morning until just before 9 a.m., and during this rather long interview, he maintained that he had never taken his ATV out on that day. He had never seen Jackie. He didn't know nothing about nothing until about an hour or so into the interview when Mike told him, "Murray, there's absolutely no question in my mind whatsoever that you took this girl for a drive on your ATV last night around 8 o'clock. Absolutely no doubt in our mind whatsoever. So let's get to if the part is really not what we are here to discuss, Murray. We are not here to discuss if you took her for a drive. We are here to discuss where you took her for a drive to. Murray, don't tell us you didn't do it. We know it was you. We definitely know that it was you that took the little girl for a ride. We don't know what happened to her from there, but you do, and you can help us out. It is of the utmost importance." Now, Murray then conceded that, "I picked her up, I drove her around, my bike started acting up, I dropped her off, I said I gotta go back and see your friends. Last I seen of her."
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
And they had put a map in front of him, and he pointed to part of it, and he said, "See that road there? And just before you get into, there's the hill that goes up. The bike starts acting up there, so I dropped her off. So she just had to go up around a bunch of alders to where her friends were. That's the last I seen of her." So according to Murray, someone else then must have come along and picked her up again and done something with her. And it was just a coincidence that she was still missing only moments after getting a ride with a stranger on his ATV. So the interview ended when he finally decided to take them up on their offer of a lawyer. And only 20 minutes after their interview had ended at 9:30, Warren Vogan was searching along the side of the highway between the road and the wooded area that the three four-wheelers, Greg, Ben, and Jody, had been along. There's some power lines there that divide the woods from Claudie Road just outside the city limits, and spotted an area where the ground looked disturbed, under a pile of like fresh cut evergreen branches and then called it in. By 10:30 that morning, Jackie had been found. So Murray met with his lawyer that afternoon, and during the dinner hour, he was questioned again, but this time being told that he was being investigated for the murder of Jackie Clark. So on the advice of his lawyer, he said nothing. Jackie was taken to Halifax, where forensics found 3 pubic hairs. She was then taken to the St. John's Regional Hospital, where Dr. Kalig conducted her autopsy on her. Her cause of death had been strangulation, and she had been brutally sexually assaulted. So they would need a DNA sample from Murray to compare the results from Jackie's autopsy. And of course, back in 1995, samples needed to be fairly large and in very good condition. You also couldn't get a warrant to demand a suspect give a DNA sample. However, only about a week or so later, that law was actually changed and they were able to get the warrant. But it turned out it wouldn't matter anyways because the DNA sample had been destroyed by the soil and the moisture in the ground that Jackie's remains had been buried in, and they were considered too contaminated to properly test. So now what they really needed was a confession. But Murray had lawyered up and was refusing to say anything more, and legally they weren't allowed to keep hounding him about it in order to elicit a confession. Like, no matter how sure they were that Murray was their guy. All they had on Murray was that he had admitted to having been the last person to be seen with her. It was not an abduction because she had gone willingly, and everything on him was circumstantial at best. And a lot of their case came down to the eyewitness testimony of a 10-year-old terrified and traumatized boy. They did have the pubic hair samples that had come back to being consistent with Murray, but hairs were not considered really good DNA samples back in 1995. There had been 2 hairs that were found on her panties and 1 that was on her body. With Jackie's case and her photos and photos of Murray plastered all over the televisions and newspapers at the time, it didn't take more than a couple of days before 2 young women who were unknown to each other came forward that when they were 8, eerily similar things had happened to them, that they had both been offered a ride by a man on either like an ATV or a dirt bike, and then taken into the woods where he would feign that this ATV or bike had overheated and had to stop, and then they were violated. They had also been threatened that he would kill them. And the man both women identified had been Murray Lyons. Now, these 2 women, being brave enough to come forward with their stories, now provided Mike and his partner to bring Murray back in for questioning about their assaults, but it didn't necessarily preclude them from mentioning Jackie's case again. So they reached out to Murray's lawyer and was given permission to question him. In the meantime, Mike knew that this was going to be a very important interview and that it was of the utmost importance that he managed to get a confession about Jackie's murder out of him. It was the only hope that they had for justice for her mom and stepdad. So Mike Richards contacted Robert Keppel, who was a professor at the University of New Haven. Robert had been involved heavily in the investigation into Ted Bundy murders. He also completed a 12-year doctorate program and worked for the Washington State Attorney General's office. And while working on the Green River Killer Task Force, Ted Bundy had actually reached out to him in a series of letters offering his help in true Hannibal Lecter fashion. And Robert had somehow been able to get confessions from both Ted Bundy and Gary Ridgway, who was identified as the Green River Killer himself. Now, Keppel unfortunately died in 2021, but back in 1995, he was willing to talk to Mike Richards and give him some tips for his interview that might help garner a confession. His methods were unconventional at the time, to say the least, but they are being used more and more across police forces all over the place. PhD Catherine Ramsland interviewed him, Robert Kempel, back in around 1984. And he said, when he was talking about interviewing Ted Bundy, he said, first, question the interviewee at his level. Use the same words that he uses in the same sentence structure. His technique involved getting down to the same level as the suspect, like being sympathetic to them. And the number one thing to do was, as distasteful as it is to blame the victim to get them to tell them what they did, especially with regards to victims of sex crimes. These guys always feel that nothing they do is ever their fault, and they want to hear that somebody understands like who they are and what makes them tick. So Murray Lyons was brought in from the provincial jail where he was being kept for trial on the abduction charges to the Fredericton police station on June 14th at about 10 in the morning. Now, Mike Richards found the idea of pretending to agree with and kind of feel the same way as Murray about young girls and the whole victim blaming thing was so distasteful. And he was so concerned about this interview later being played in court to a jury, did an introduction for the video before Murray was brought into the interview room. Now, according to the likely more dramatized version on the CBC show, The Detectives, he said, Murray Lyons is a pedophile and a murderer. He needs to face justice. So I'm going to have to say some things that disgust me. Sickening things. I think this is the only way to get him to confess. So if you're watching, please know that many of the things I'm about to say, I don't believe. However, according to the actual introduction on the tape, which I would love to play for you, but CBC or the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation owns the rights to it, he says, the reason we're doing an introduction to this tape is that we'll be using a theme in this interrogation that is not in good taste, to say the least. Approximately 15 minutes ago, we got Murray Lyons out of the New Brunswick Street jail. We tried other themes in other interviews and only got so far and didn't get over the edge that we felt we needed to. So we're going to try a theme of victim blaming, and we're going to take basically the age out of the equation and treat this as if it was an adult offender sexually assaulting an adult victim. It is an act and only an act, and it's going to be hard to act. Right now, it's 10:45 on my watch, 14th day of June, 1995. Murray Lyons is now placed in the CID interview room. Videotape is on, which I like his dramatized version better, because in this one, it kind of sounds like the reason it sickens him so much is because Jackie is a child. But adult victims, it's okay to victim blame them. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's not what he meant, so I don't want to put motives into his word, but I think it's just a good example of how words really matter. Anywho, by telling Murray that they understood that how could he possibly control himself when this pretty young girl willingly goes on a ride with him, a stranger, whatever, other blah, 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 gross stuff. So Murray gives up the goods and offers to take them out to where he had buried her body in the shallow grave, which was near the highway. Now, something you have to have when you have confessions is something that only the perpetrator would know, like the exact location of a body or other evidence, because otherwise the defense can claim that they were coerced into a confession. And I'm just going to read you a little bit from the court documents about what he said when he led detectives out to Jackie's gravesite. Murray, if we could maybe just get you to take the cigarette out of your mouth for a minute and just tell us what went on and where we are. And Murray says, we stopped here. Did something happen here, Murray? This is where it started. How far did it go here? You can tell us what happened here, Murray. We understand. This is where I killed her. So from here, what happened, Murray? You're looking this way. Did something happen in that direction? Up in that way? Okay, do you want to take us and show us where? Did everything with Jackie when she was alive happen here, Murray? I would say so. So Murray Lyons, at 39 years old, was convicted of first-degree murder of the 8-year-old Jackie Clark in 1996. It was first-degree as opposed to second-degree because there was obvious evidence of a sexual assault during the course of a murder. And when you do that, it doesn't matter if you planned it or not. It's double gross and horrible, so it becomes first degree automatically. That's in most jurisdictions, that's the case. And as y'all know by now, here in Canada, that means life in prison, no parole for at least 25 years. There's no need to examine mitigating or aggravating factors. Sexual assault is always considered an aggravating factor, when it comes to murder. Anyways, he was sent to the Renous prison. He appealed on the grounds that he had been tricked into confessing and other bullshit, which was denied. And in late May of 1999, prison guards found Murray dead in his cell from an obvious homicide based on the electrical cord that was wrapped around his neck rather tightly. Murray had been living in protective custody with about 70 other greatly despised inmates for similar crimes against children. Murray's mom, Mina, was outraged and hoped that his murder would be investigated with the same rigor as Jackie's had been, telling CBC that he had been begging God for forgiveness. His obituary doesn't really have any kind words left in memory of him. Murray Lyon's murder was investigated. It was attributed to 33-year-old fellow inmate Michael Smith. Michael confessed to prison staff, but he pled not guilty to second-degree murder. They did have surveillance tapes that showed that Murray was last seen going into his cell at 9:30 p.m. on the evening of May 27th, 1999. Michael was seen going in and out of his cell after that, and Murray was found in his cell around 3 a.m. One correctional officer testified that he had heard someone whisper, "The child molester is dead." And that was the murder of Jackie Clark. And as always, I'm going to be back again next week with another case. You can do all your normal stuff. And as always, thank you so much for listening.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, "We worked together. We did a good job."
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.